On a dark desert highway, cool wind in my hair, warm smell of Calitas rising up through the air. Up ahead in the distance, I saw a shimmering light. My head grew heavy and my sight grew dim. I had to stop for the night. There she stood in the doorway. I heard the mission bell. And I was thinking to myself, this could be heaven or this could be hell. Then she lit up a candle and she showed me the way. There were voices down the corridor. I thought I heard them say, welcome to the Hotel California. Such a lovely place, such a lovely face. Plenty of room at the Hotel California. Any time of year, you can find it here. Her mind is Tiffany twisted. She got the Mercedes Benz. She got a lot of pretty, pretty boys that she calls friends. How they dance in the courtyard, sweet summer sweat. Some dance to remember, some dance to forget. So I called up the captain, please bring me my wine. He said, we haven't had that spirit here since 1969. And still those voices are calling from far away. Wake you up in the middle of the night just to hear them say, welcome to the Hotel California. Such a lovely place, such a lovely face. Living it up at the Hotel California. What a nice surprise. Bring your alibis. Mirrors on the ceiling, the pink champagne on ice. And she said, we are all just prisoners here of our own device. And in the master's chamber, they gathered for the feast. They stab it with their steely knives, but they just can't kill the beast. The last thing I remember, I was running for the door. I had to find the passage back to the place I was before. Relax, said the nightman. We are programmed to receive. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. Welcome to the Hotel California. Such a lovely place, such a lovely face. Plenty of room at the Hotel California. Any time of year, you can find it here. Well, you found the new American Dream radio show. And we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's also at revolution.radio. And you can also listen at newdream.us. That's our website. And most of our background, most of our archive shows are listening. I'm Chuck Gregory, and like I said, this is the New American Dream radio show, and I'm proud now to welcome my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Larry Pinkney, Derek Pott, M.K. Davis, Frank Cordero, and Philip Ferrugio. And so this Thursday evening, we're gathering for the New American Dream radio show in Fort Lauderdale, in northern Minnesota, in Des Moines, in Port Orange, Florida, in Benton, Mississippi, in Chicago, in Minneapolis, and wherever you are. I recommend the 1984 issue of Penn Magazine. It's now available at Penn Magazine, Penn, P-E-N-N, magazine.us. I also recommend, you can find it on YouTube, Mainstream Media as a Weapon of Social Engineering and War. Also recommended by TruthStream Media, found on YouTube, this 1967 CIA memo is still used to discredit conspiracy theorists today. That's TruthStream Media. Also recommended, find it on Jim Tracy's Memory Hole blog. Wolfgang Halbag presents stunning evidence that Sandy Hook School was closed months before so-called massacre. That's Jim Tracy's Memory Hole blog. And remember, Penn Magazine, the newest issue, is now available at PennMagazine.us. And now our first guest of the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each week from Des Moines, Iowa, the Des Moines Catholic Worker. Chuck talked to Frank earlier in the day, and we're going to get to hear that right now. Frank Cordero in Des Moines.
Hello, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well here in Iowa. It's cooled off a bit because it's just been raining. We just got tons and tons of rain. Luckily, the Catholic Worker is on high ground. Although many of our guests who are tenting or living near or close to the river, a lot of them got washed out the last couple of nights. So that's going on. So we're scrabbling for tents and sleeping bags.
Yeah.
Wow. But that's that's just the ebb and flow of a life with the street folks in the Midwest, because these things come and go. The weather is crazy, just crazy. Because before that, it's just been outrageously hot. But of course, what am I telling people from Florida, a guy from Florida, about our hot weather? The worker stuff. I cooked a great meal. I'm rather proud of it. We've really been blessed with good food, and I'm. We're putting together another Via Pacis. You know, that's our quarterly newsletter. Anybody who would like to get this paper, no trouble. Just get a hold of us at P.O. Box 4551, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. How about that for a plug?
Right.
But we're mostly, I'm mostly taken up, initially now, I'm quite taken up by a campaign where we're supporting here at Barragan House. It's called the No Respect for U.S. Military Billboard Campaign here in Iowa. I know I talked about it last week, and it's still very much present with me as something that really hopefully will take off. The degree of lies, as you well know, that permeate our culture is extraordinary, systemic. And the lies are so big that personalities rarely have anything to do with them, given the last two presidents we had. Our Barack Obama is a caricature of the best of what the left would want to have out there. And yet he was the worst president ever when he was president, because he's the one that unleashed the killer drones, preferring to assassinate people from the skies and torture them. And then we get Ronald Reagan, again, a caricature as a human being of the ugly America. Can't get any more ugly than someone like him. And both those guys as presidents were serial killers. That you have to be. I'm only saying these things because the degrees of lies permeate the culture, and neither of the parties have come anywhere close to dealing with what we have to deal with, which is our offensive military empire, as many of your listeners well know. So the scene here is that the state of Iowa has... people have more regard for military people than they do their churches. They have a high respectability. And these billboards, these army billboards, are playing on that. Earn respect and $40,000 if you qualify. Enlist in the army. We send a lot of people into the military and abroad. And now we have this armed drone command. And and the issue is, what's it mean to be in a computer stall in Des Moines, Iowa, where you live home and you shop at our stores and you go to our churches, and when you're doing your 8-to-5 job, you're sitting in a computer stall targeting, killing, and assessing people in the Middle East? That's a war crime, and that's not military. That's not a soldier. These folks don't deserve to be called soldiers, and they're doing war crimes. So there can't be any respect, that's what we're saying, for Iowans in the military based on their own terms of what a warrior is, while we're committing war crimes with computer geeks on the south side of Des Moines. I'm profoundly convinced that with a determined effort on our part and grassroots folks, we can make an impression on this state and the moral leadership about the obscenity of our pro-rich, pro-war, pro-USA Christianity. And this drone command center, the armed drone command centers, is a perfect system because you can identify it as absolutely immoral, illegal, and unjust, doesn't even pass basic human rights, let alone a war, rules of war, and it's specific, and it's very local. So we're not going after the whole damn military and the arms race or whatever, like to, but we're saying this system, this mission of this system is morally repugnant. It's a war crime acting right now. And people have to beg willful ignorance not to know that the United States is targeting and killing people all the time with these things. All the time. Yeah. Well, that's our argument, and I'm quite animated by it, as your listeners might be bored at this. This is the second week I've been going through this, but I'm quite struck by the clarity of things. And this billboard thing suits my personality personally and my arc of my life. I mean, I began my civil disobedience with putting blood on the Pentagon pillars, 1977. And I earned my first six-month bit painting a sign at Offutt Air Force Base where it said, "Peace is our profession." We crossed out the word peace and put the word war. So I'm this billboard thing for me has an arc of history that says, yeah, this is very consistent to what needs to be done. And that's where I'm going. And hopefully we'll have more people help us, and we'll start having these things sprout all over the state of Iowa. That'll be cool.
Well, yeah, I hope so.
Well, that's my summer project.
All right, then. Yeah, you know, on the topic of these, these war crimes, I was reading recently that in this current administration with Trump, the number of bombs has skyrocketed. It was high under Bush. It got higher under Obama. And now it's like a bomb 12 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. It is so ugly. We're screaming our heads out here in Des Moines the best way we can because we have one of these drone command centers. Hell, they've been good. The mission's been growing, so much that who knows? There could be one of these drone command centers in every neighborhood. This country has gone crazy mad, I tell you. And now the president wants to start a new armed services called the Services in Space.
Right.
Son of a bitch. We already are in space. We already are killing people in space. And these computer geeks are your warriors in there. And they're not warriors. They're not soldiers. They're assassins. They're just assassins from space. And that's what they do if they do everything what they say they do, kill the bad guys. But we all know that's not all they do.
I know.
They don't just kill bad guys.
Yeah. Well, that same thing.
Well, that's where we're at. Yeah.
Same thing that told me about a bomb every 12 minutes also said the number of bad guys that they get of their targets is something like 2%.
Oh, God. Will we? Oh, God. Oh, God. Why do they hate us? Because we bomb them and kill them. Duh.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I kind of hate us, too.
Yeah. Well, Chuck. Yeah. So, brother, try to have a good day with these realities around us. Do the best we can to speak the truth where we're at, huh?
Exactly.
That's where we're at.
Thanks. Thanks. As always, it's been great. Talk to you next time.
Talk to you next week. God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless.
And now we catch up with the Bubba family. The Bubba family is continuing. We just won a RV on the Price is Right World Tour. And right now they're pulling into the Walmart parking lot in Fayette, Alabama to rest before heading up to Double Springs to watch the World Cup soccer match between Spain and Germany on the Bob's Tavern color TV. They've got bumper stickers all over the RV, from the Aurora Theater, 9/11, Oklahoma City, Shanksville, Waco, Sandy Hook, Abu Ghraib, Branson, Mount Rushmore, Ruby Ridge, the Winter Olympics in Ping Pong, South Korea, Hurricane Katrina, the Ebola virus, Disneyland, Osama bin Laden's burial at sea, the Appalachian Trail, Wall Drug, Crocodile World, the Boston bombing, and the shooting at Santa Fe High School. As they begin to set up the jarts, the George Foreman grill, the hammocks, and the clothesline, the twins, Bubba Bubba, along with Bubba John, Bubba Carl, Bubba Jennifer, and Bubba Dad and Bubba Mom, work together to set up the TV connection, stringing extension cords all the way to Taco Bell. Bubba Barbara doesn't go with them. She's sitting on top of the RV in the folding chair with her headphones on, writing in her journal.
The tragedy of September 11, 2001 goes far beyond the deaths of those who died in the towers and the deaths of firefighters and first responders who succumbed to illnesses caused by inhalation of toxic dust. For 13 years, a new generation of Americans has been born into the 9/11 myth that has been used to create the American warfare police state. The corrupt Bush and Obama and Trump regimes used 9/11 to kill, maim, dispossess, and displace the millions of Muslims in seven countries, none of whom had anything whatsoever to do with 9/11. A generation of Americans has been born into disdain and distrust of Muslims. A generation of Americans has been born into a police state in which privacy and constitutional protections no longer exist. A generation of Americans has been born into continuous warfare while needs of citizens go unmet. A generation of Americans has been born into a society in which truth is replaced with the endless repetition of falsehoods. According to the official story, on September 11, 2001, the vaunted national security state of the world's only superpower was defeated by a few young Saudi Arabians armed only with box cutters. If such a thing actually happened, there would have been demands from the White House, Congress, from the media for an investigation. Officials would have been held accountable for their failures. Heads would have rolled. Instead, the White House resisted for 1 year the 9/11 family's demands for an investigation. The worst security failure in history resulted in not a single firing. No one was held responsible. Washington concluded that 9/11 was possible because America lacked a police state. The Patriot Act, which was awaiting the event, was quickly passed by the congressional idiots. The act established executive branch independence of law and the Constitution. The act and follow-up measures have institutionalized that police state in the land of the free. Osama bin Laden, a CIA asset dying of renal failure, was blamed despite his explicit denial. For the next 10 years, Osama bin Laden was the bogeyman that provided the excuse for Washington to kill countless numbers of Muslims. And suddenly on May 2nd, 2011, Obama claimed that U.S. Navy SEALs killed bin Laden in Pakistan. Eyewitnesses on the scene contradicted the White House story. Osama bin Laden became the only human in history to survive renal failure for 10 years. There's no dialysis machine in what was said to be bin Laden's hideaway. The numerous obituaries of bin Laden's death in December 2001 went down the memory hole. The SEAL team died a few weeks later in a mysterious helicopter crash in Afghanistan. The thousands of sailors on the aircraft carrier, which bin Laden was said to have been dumped into the Indian Ocean, wrote home that no such burial took place. The fairy tale story of bin Laden's murder by SEAL Team 6 served to end the challenge by disappointed Democrats to Obama's nomination for a second term. It also freed the war on terror from the bin Laden constraint. Washington wanted to attack Libya, Syria, and Iran, countries in which bin Laden was known not to have organizations. The succession of fake bin Laden videos in which bin Laden grew progressively younger as the fake bin Laden claimed credit for each successive attack, these had lost credibility among experts. Watching the Twin Towers and WT-7 come down, it was obvious to me these buildings were not falling down as a result of structural damage. When it became clear the White House had blocked an independent investigation of the only three steel skyscrapers in world history to collapse as a result of low-temperature office fires, it was apparent there was a cover-up. After 13 years, people at home and abroad find the government story less believable. After years of persistence, a group in New York has secured the necessary number of valid signatures to put on the ballot a vote to investigate the cause of the collapse of the three WTC buildings. The official account, if correct, means existing fire and building codes are insufficient to protect the public, and all other steel high-rise structures are subject to the same failure. The group has been clever to frame the issue in terms of public safety and not in terms of 9/11 truth. But the New York authorities, of course, continue to oppose the initiative. The question now rests on a judge's ruling. It's difficult to imagine a judge going against the government in such a major way. 9/11 was used to fundamentally alter the nature of the U.S. government and its relationship to the American people. Unaccountable executive power has replaced due process and the checks and balances established by the U.S. Constitution. In the name of national security, executive power knows no restraints. Essentially, Americans today have no rights if the government targets them. Those Americans born after 9/11 were born into a different country from the rest of us. Having never experienced constitutional government, they will not know what they have lost. Most Americans are unaware of the extent to which the federal government owns the experts who can contradict its fairy tales. The 9/11 lie has persisted for 13 years. Millions of Muslims have paid for this lie with their lives, the destruction of their families, and with their dislocation. Most Americans remain comfortable with the fact that their government has destroyed, in whole or part, seven countries.
Okay, got her all hooked up just in time for the show, shouted Bubba Dad as he plugged the last extension cord right in the side of the RV.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message. Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and Earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the evening, Philip Ferrugio, joins us from Port Orange, Florida, with It's the Empire, Stupid.
Good evening, Working Stiffs. You know, Sunday was Father's Day, and here's something for you to really think about. On Father's Day, poor Alphonse. He was my dad, and he most likely never had a chance for a better life. He was born in 1915 to a Sicilian father and a Neapolitan mother, both immigrants. When Alphonse was 10, he lost all his teeth from gum disease. Then at 17, at the onset of the Great Depression, he was able to get into Brooklyn College, which was a school that required top grades for enrollment. A year into his college career, the torment of the Depression forced his parents to close their candy store. In order to make ends meet, Mom and Dad, and yes, Alphonse, had to go out and find jobs. He dropped out of college and found the menial job, much to the chagrin of the dean, who saw a great future for young Alphonse. A shitty job, but that extra money coming in would mean lunch for the family would not just be banana or broccoli Rob sandwiches. His dad, Peter, a proud and highly intelligent man who actually graduated college in Tunisia, found work as a machinist, and Alphonse's mom found work in a factory. Peter got involved with the union, and by the late 1930s was going out on strike. A lot. The times were becoming rougher, and the New York City cops were always there to protect the owners, not the workers. Violence was in the air. One day, Alphonse got a phone call that his dad was in jail, arrested during a labor scuffle. The bail was too high for them to get Peter out. So Alphonse and his mother went around to everyone and anyone they knew, literally begging for help. Finally, they had enough to get Peter out. The caveat to all this was that Peter was told that he would never get a job in that trade again, ever. Alphonse and his mom kept working, and Peter kept looking for work, any kind of work. He tried to get on relief, which was a precursor to today's welfare, but the waiting list was too long. It seemed that things were not working well for the family. One day, December 1st, 1940, Alphonse's mom came home from her factory job to find the love of her life lying in their bathtub, dead from a gunshot to his head. He was thoughtful, even in suicide, to make sure that he did it in the tub, not wishing to bloody up the floor. Alphonse got drafted a year and a half later and was sent to the tank corps training in Texas. Before he was to be shipped out, the Army released him as the sole supporting son. He returned home and found a job at the Brooklyn Navy Yard for the remainder of the war. He made friends with a fellow named Amos, a fellow Italian-American, and after the war, they decided to go into the used car business. Alphonse was good at choosing cars, and Amos was a natural as a fast-talking salesman. Things were good. Alphonse had married his childhood sweetheart by then and had two sons, this writer being the newest arrival. The wheel of fate rotated once again in the early 50s when Amos took out a bank loan and forged Alphonse's name as a co-signer. When he could not repay the loan, they came after Alphonse, and before long, he had to declare personal bankruptcy. He lost the car lot and wound up getting a job on the docks as a longshoreman. Yes, other men had it much worse, but other men were not my father. He never once stopped loving me his entire life. He was always there for myself and my older brother, always. May his spirit enjoy the joy and happiness on the other side of this dream called life. The joy and happiness that only came in spurts for dear Alphonse. Thank you, and happy Father's Week.
And now for another episode of The American on the Hot Sidewalk, holding up a tin can and a sign in the middle of the city. The American on the hot sidewalk holding up a tin can and a sign in the middle of the city looked up and squinted at somebody staring down at him, holding up his can in one hand and his sign in the other. He tries to make his signs humorous, something about how his family was kidnapped by ninjas and now he needs money for karate lessons. But today's sign says, the poor go to prison, the rich go to hell. And this person isn't smiling. The American on the hot sidewalk holding up a tin can and a sign in the middle of the city looked away from the not smiling person in the sun and rested his head back against the brick wall yet again. He closed his eyes and went to his happy place. He went there. He came back. He squinted his eyes against the sun to see if he was still being watched. The American on the hot sidewalk holding up a can and a sign in the middle of the city held up his sign to block the sun and kept reading the book he held on the backside of the sign. And in the eyes of the people, there is the failure. And in the eyes of the hungry, there is a growing wrath. In the souls of the people, the grapes of wrath are filling and growing heavy for the vintage. One man, one family, driven from the land, this rusty car creaking along the highway to the west. I lost my land. A single tractor took my land. I am alone and bewildered. And in the night, one family camps in a ditch, and another family pulls in and the tents come out. The two men squat on their hams, and the women and children listen. Here is the node, you who hate change and fear revolution. Keeping these two squatting men apart, make them hate, fear, suspect each other. Here is the onlash of the thing you fear. This is the zygote. For here, I lost my land is changed. A cell is split, and from its splitting grows the thing you hate. We lost our land. The danger is here, for two men are not as lonely and perplexed as one. And from this first we, there grows a still little more dangerous thing. I have a little food, plus I have none. If from this problem the sum is we have a little food, the thing is on its way. The movement has direction. Only a little multiplication now in this land, this tractor, are ours. The two men squatting in a ditch, the little fire, the side meat, stewing in a single pot, the silent stone-eyed women behind, the children listening with their souls to words their minds do not understand. The night draws down. The baby has a cold. Here, take this blanket. It's wool. It was my mother's blanket. Take it for the baby. This is the thing to bomb. This is the beginning from I to we. And the great owners who must lose their land in an upheaval, the great owners with access to history, with eyes to read history and to know the great fact, when property accumulates in too few hands, it is taken away. And that companion fact, when a majority of the people are hungry and cold, they will take by force what they need. and the little screaming fact that sounds through all history. Repression works only to strengthen and knit the repressed. The great owners ignored the three cries of history. The land fell into fewer hands. The number of the dispossessed increased, and every effort of the great owners was directed at repression. The money was spent for arms, for gas, to protect the great holdings, and spies were sent to catch the murmuring of revolt so that it might be stamped out. The changing economy was ignored, plans for the change ignored, and only means to destroy revolt were considered, while the causes of revolt went on. And now we join In Progress, another episode of 1984-ish, The Adventures of Jesus H. Christ in America. We find Jesus H. Christ stocking shelves in the hardware department. Hey, Bub, can you find me a 48-pack of Mountain Dew Extra Bolt? Said this one guy.
I'm new here, but I think that's in another department anyway, said Jesus H. Christ.
The man drew up close and read out loud the name tag with a smiley face. Jesus H. Christ. Jesus H. Christ? Is that supposed to be a joke? I'm a Christian.
I know, right? Said Jesus H. Christ.
The man walked around behind and studied the long hair tied up in a ponytail. Jesus H. Christ then went out of his department to help the man find his 72-pack of Mountain Dew Extra Jolt, then carried it for him to the door, where they were met by Mavis. Can I see your receipt? Said Mavis.
He doesn't have a receipt, said Jesus H. Christ. He's with me. He pointed to his smiley face badge.
Well, Jesus H. Christ, said Mavis. He has to have a receipt. This is not a charity.
Well, he needs it, I guess, the Mountain Dew, said Jesus H. Christ.
Jesus H. Christ, that's just not how this works, said Mavis.
What's that, said Jesus H. Christ, pointing toward the top of the 90-foot ceiling.
What's what, said Mavis, looking. I don't see nothing.
Jesus H. Christ helped the man get his 200-pack of Mountain Dew Extra Big Jolt into his pickup, and then walked back toward the store. Stay tuned next week for another episode of 1984-ish, The Adventures of Jesus H. Christ in America. Sponsored by Holy Mackerel Olive Oil in the 64-pack in the big brown box. Our next guest of the evening, Derek Potts, is filling in for Anthony Rayson this week. Derek is an archivist with DePaul University, and we're going to be calling Derek right now.
Hello?
Hello, Derek. This is Chuck Gray and Mike Palachuk, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Thanks. Thanks for having me tonight. And for those of you who are normally tuning in to listen for Anthony Rayson, I'm filling in for him this week, and you may be asking why. Well, I work at DePaul University in the Special Collections and Archives. I'm an archivist there. And in 2008, Anthony donated a copy of his zine collection to DePaul University. And at the time, it was agreed that the Special Collections Department would provide the same sort of service that Anthony does to incarcerated folks. So we received letters in the mail. And incarcerated folks will request copies of the prison or prison-related zines that Anthony publishes and produces. And for anyone who's not familiar with what a zine is, they're little booklets that contain prisoner-authored text or resource lists, poetry, art, etc. And almost immediately, folks contacted us and requested materials. I've actually myself been in charge of this program for the last 3 years and making certain tweaks and changes and just being a little bit more thoughtful about it. We've now increased the number of packages we send out. And so in the last 2 years, we've sent out roughly a package a day to folks in nearly 100 different jails and prisons across the United States. So it's quite a successful, parallel program to what Anthony's doing. I think is a wonderful example of, how an institution or institutions can often be problematic and can provide barriers kind of hold on to power. I think this is a wonderful example of collaboration where activism can work on the inside as well, frankly. And so in addition to the program that we're doing, sending the zines to prisons, there's also currently, if you're in the Chicago area, you want to come to DePaul Library of the Special Collections, there's an incarceration exhibit that I curated and mounted that will be up through the end of the year, which has a number of materials from Anthony's collection, including original artwork that he was super generous to loan us. So if you'd like to see some pretty amazing artwork from people that are currently in prison, you can feel free to come in and check that out as well. The exhibit it doesn't just have Anthony's materials, it also is a chance to highlight other materials that we have that are connected to the collections with prison themes or activism. So for instance, we have the papers of Sister Helen Prejean, who is working actively to end the death penalty. And we have the papers of Phil Berrigan, Liz McAllister, Daniel Berrigan, other members of Plowshares working for peace, anti-war, and anti-violence. Those are just examples. And so we have materials of theirs on display as well. And so the exhibit is an opportunity to showcase individuals, whether they be incarcerated folks currently or formerly, or activists and advocates as individuals. And so not looking at incarceration as people, not just as a subject. So that's currently something else we're doing with Anthony's materials. An intention of mine was to connect the exhibit to the greater community. And so part of that strategy was to go within the last year to a symposium on our campus, DePaul's campus, called entitled Dismantling Mass Incarceration. And at that event, talked with a lot of community members, a lot of prison abolitionists, and came up with a lot of wonderful kind of strategies and ideas going forward, but also met with a student group on campus that I was unaware of, DePaul Students Against Incarceration. And so developed a relationship and talked with those folks about, how can what we do in Special Collections and with our materials support what you're doing. And the students came up with a wonderful event that they wanted to have in our space. And so they did. We had 60 people, faculty members and formerly incarcerated people on a panel to discuss the prison industrial complex. And so this was in the same space where the incarceration exhibit is currently. So it was, another wonderful way to kind of further connect these materials, outside of our space. And that led to further discussions with people on DePaul's campus. We currently are involved at DePaul with something called the Inside Out Prison Exchange Program. It's a national program of which DePaul has a chapter, if you will. And what that is, it's faculty members who go inside our nearest state prison in Chicago, which is Stateville near Joliet, and they're DePaul faculty that teach classes, some that are classes specifically with incarcerated folks, think tanks in particular, and also the kind of the true inside out classes, which involve half DePaul students that come from the campus and then half inside folks. And I was privileged recently to travel to Stateville with the class and to sit in and to meet the guys inside and to just really absorb and listen and try to really be inspired by what folks might want to have access to on the inside. And that's really currently a big focus of mine is to expand, really be inspired by Anthony's collection and getting materials copied in the hands of folks inside who are thirsty for information and clearly have a limited choices at best. And so looking at, hey, are there other materials that we have in our collections that could be photocopied as well, that could come in, even if it's not the mail, through a notebook and brought in to classes that people could, be able to read through distribution that way. So that's kind of give you a sense of who I am and why I'm here and how I'm connected to Anthony Rason's collection. And for me, it makes it really easy to come to work every day. And it's not the only thing I do, so I should clarify. It's just one of the many things I do, but it's certainly a major focus of something I do every single day. It's part of the letters that I get from incarcerated folks really give you the information you need to know about how important this is in their lives and how limited folks are. Many, many, many people that write are in solitary confinement, administrative segregation, on death row. Are really, really in need of a connection and in need of information beyond the non-existent law library, which maybe there may not. I could read a lot of the captions of what people have written. I actually will choose to share something a little different. Someone recently wrote, and I thought this was it was really spot on. They wrote, thanks to Paul, I got your recent package, and I really appreciate it. But what's in it for you? What do you get out of this? And I thought that's an awesome question, and I actually really appreciate, and in a sense, the suspicion, if you will. Why are you sending this stuff? Now, for me personally, it's really easy because I feel like I get to come to work every day and be an activist and be a part of greater good and help somebody that is on the margins. There's other things that guide me as well. And then actually I should qualify this. This isn't just me at my institution doing this. And it may not be prison related. It might be in other ways, but I should make it very clear that people that work in libraries and archives and museums and other cultural institutions, honestly, by and large, and the folks that I've met, as a rule, are thinking on this line. They're looking for ways to connect to community. They're looking for ways to support social justice causes. This just happens to be, one of the ways that I'm able to do it where I'm at. The place I work, beyond what I already care about, the university library they work at has a mission statement, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I just want to briefly say it. It calls the DePaul Library to cultivate and sustain the intellectual, creative, and social passions of our students, faculty, and staff, and the important part for me, as we work together to advance the goals of a more just, ethical, and diverse global society. It's really simple, and it's really active. It's not a passive directive. It's not, please come in and put books on shelves and be quiet and don't have an opinion. And it's really clear. It's really simple. And this is where I work, but if you go in a larger tent, the Society of American Archivists has very similar kinds of statements that are much longer. There's, I'll add just a piece. They call for the widest possible accessibility of materials. Really simple. Access to information, freedom of information. There's also a special mandate within the SAA to encourage overlooked and marginalized community members' use of historical research sources. And this really ties in beautifully with what Howard Zinn talked about years ago at a Society of American Archivists event, where he challenged the notion that that archivists are neutral, passive people, and he said, "Absolutely, you're not. You're active people. You are activists." And actually, this is the larger context of declaring that all government information should be freely available to people. And so that was kind of his larger cause, but it's instructive. And it's, again, it's the goal and the aim and the enthusiasm to make sure that you're putting as much information in the hands of many people as possible. And obviously looking for people that have the least possible chance. I'm not worried about privileged, wealthy, powerful folks getting their hands on information. They have that. And so that's kind of what I'm able to do in a small way in the place that I'm at. this idea of gatekeepers, I want to mention just one or two other things here. Because we hold materials, but there's also wonderful opportunities to collaborate with communities, and I'm inspired by this, and I think and hope that this is, you know, where the community continues to go in terms of cultural repositories. One example is the Guatemalan National Police Historical Archives. They're in Guatemala, the physical archives, and I won't go through the long story of how they were found and how they were dealt with, but there's a digital copy at the University of Texas. And it's very much a human rights motivated effort, because these documents spanning decades, the police records happen to document the Guatemalan Civil War atrocities. And so they're much like other regimes and other countries historically that document themselves and the evil that they perpetuate on citizens. It's in the documents. And so for the first time ever, family members have opportunities to find out where their loved one was disappeared to. There's records of torture. And so I just want to point that out as another example of kind of an opposite connection to social justice and activism, where, you know, an entity, an institution is going out into the world and looking for ways to collaborate, and then also keep the materials, the physical materials, in the hands of the community. And ceding power in that way, if you want to look at it as power. And then you can go a step further. And again, I'm just giving just tiny examples of this, but there's communities self-documenting and creating their own archives. And there's many, many examples. But again, thinking of the topic of police, there's the People's Archive of Police Violence in Cleveland. It's a website you can go to. And people can upload anything related to that topic. And it's people documenting themselves, communities, they're empowered to document themselves. And personally, I'm looking to continue, looking for other types of efforts that I can bring in the place that I work at. I should mention, I'm not sure where I'm at on time, but I should mention, in case anybody's interested in contacting DePaul, or myself, related to Anthony Racine Zine collection or any of our collections for that matter, prison materials, social justice, activism materials. You can reach us at archives@depaul.edu. That's our general email. And if you want to reach me directly, my name again is Derek, D-E-R-E-K, last name Potts, P-O-T-T-S, at dpotts and the number 2 at depaul.edu. And if you go online to the general website, it's library.depaul.edu/special-collective. Pleasure again to be here, and good luck with everyone else's efforts and all you do. Thanks for having us, Doug.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest for the show is Larry Pinkney. Larry Pinkney joins us each month from Minneapolis. Larry is a former member of the Black Panther Party in the 1960s. He's a writer, a commentator, and activist. And we're going to attempt to contact Larry Pinkney in Minneapolis right now.
Good evening, Larry Pinkney speaking.
Well, hello, Larry. It's Chuck and Mike, the new American Dream radio show, and you're on the air.
Thank you so much, my brother Chuck and my brother Mike. I just want to share some what I consider great news. I had the opportunity a few days ago, despite all my medical problems, et cetera, to spend time with my brothers and sisters. And I'm speaking in a generic, general sense, in Texas, of all places. And it was fantastic. Let me explain what I mean when I say fantastic. I was in towns, small towns, because that's where I find the real people. No denigration meant to anyone who lives in cities. But I was in small towns around Austin, Texas, and was meeting and speaking at length with a number of people, and listening to what they had to say. You know, these are the people that Hillary Clinton referred to as deplorables. These are the people who she had the unmitigated audacity to put down. And I just have to tell you that when I say you, I mean the audience of the New American Dream radio show. I just have to tell you that it was one of the most incredible experiences in a very positive sense that I've had in my life. Really one of the most incredible. I spoke with people from different walks of life, from who just were just everyday, ordinary people struggling to survive, struggling to keep their communities intact. One of the places that I spent most of the time in was a place called Bastrop, B-A-S-T-R-O-P, Bastrop, Texas, and went all through Bastrop with a very dear friend of mine, Darren McBreen, who happens to be with InfoWars. And just, I don't know how to explain this other than to say the people were so honest. It was none of that PC crap. You asked a question, they would answer it straightforward and speaking from their perspective. But what was also incredible, they listened to what I had to say, and I listened to what they had to say. And this is the America that I believe in. This is the America that I believe in. Black, white, brown, red, yellow, all power to the people. These brothers and sisters taught me, and I hope that I also taught them. I think we taught each other. We learned from each other. Not to mention the fact that I had time, I actually spent some time with some horses and roosters and you name it, I was there. And it was amazing. Just ordinary, down-to-earth, everyday people. It reminded me of a song that came out, I believe, in the late 60s, Ode to Billy Joe. Y'all remember that song? You know, and I just thought of the struggling people across our nation. I had the opportunity to ask questions such as, well, what do you think of people coming into this nation who don't follow the guidelines? They're fleeing from this or fleeing from that, or maybe they're not. But their response was very honest. They said, you know what? We have a lot of friends who came from different parts of South and Latin America who came here and did it the right way. And we love and support them. That's what they said. But we do not accept those who come in and tell us that if we don't accept them, we're a bunch of racists. And I went, sure, you're right. You got that right. I think that the honesty of the brothers and sisters that I had the opportunity to speak with in Texas was the thing that really, really overwhelmed me. I didn't have to deal with that PC nonsense, that so-called political correctness nonsense, which is, in my humble opinion, nothing more than censorship. So I just wanted to share that this evening with the audience of the New American Dream. I believe that our country, I believe that the United States, with all of its failings, all of its challenges, you know, the good, the bad, that this country has an opportunity, everyday ordinary people, to take it back, to really struggle for all of us. And, you know, I guess I just have to say I'm sick and tired of the division that's being put forth, in my humble opinion, especially by the so-called, and I do say so-called, Democrat Big D Party, who seems to think that the only way to control people or get power is to control people. So I just want to thank publicly all my brothers and sisters that I had the honor of spending time with, spending some days with, and thank them for teaching me and thank them for being so honest and straightforward with me. We didn't agree on everything, but we didn't have to. That was not what it was about. It was about honesty. It was about sharing their experiences. And I'm still on a, as Curtis Mayfield would say, I'm still on a natural high from other human beings. And I just wanted to share that. The New American Dream radio show, which, by the way, I did mention to a number of people while I was in Texas, that I love the title because this is a New American dream, that we've got to struggle to make a new American reality. So I'm not going to belabor this. I'm not going to go on and on. But every now and then, I think it's really important to share some good news. And from my humble standpoint, my perspective, that was good news. That was very, very good news. Seeing my brothers and sisters out there who were so honest, so upfront, weren't hiding behind bureaucracy, weren't hiding behind PC, just being honest. And it made it so much easier to be honest with them. So as I told them, and I say all the time to everyone, all power to the people. You know, people say, well, they're, you know, what about the people of color? Yeah, I saw folks of color, spoke with them, and okay. But, you know, I have a little problem with the term people of color, quote unquote, because what are white people? Transparent? But anyway, just wanted to say thank you to everyone. Thank you to the New American Dream radio show. We've got so much work ahead of us. I believe that this is a time where we have a window of opportunity where we really need to reach out and touch, in a metaphorical sense, each other. Reach out and touch. We can actually, I believe, make our country what Langston Hughes said, you know, let America be America again. Let America be what we really want it to be. It's a struggle. It's not easy. It takes hard work. And, you know, I just want to continually thank all the brothers and sisters that I met in Texas, especially the small towns, but some that I also met in Austin itself. But I guess I just, at this point, don't know what else to say other than, you know what? It's not all bad news. It's a lot of good news out there. We need to reach out in our local communities, and we need to really engage in honest, respectful, and serious conversation, learn and grow and evolve, not devolve, but evolve from and with each other. So I'm going to end this right here. I'm going to thank the audience of the New American radio show, the New American Dream radio show, because we're fighting and struggling to make our dream a reality. I'm going to end by saying, as I always do, all power to the people, be they black, white, brown, red, or yellow. All power to the people. Thank you so much.
Larry, thank you so much. That was a wonderful message. I'm glad that you had such a wonderful trip and met great people and communicated, because communicating with each other, that's really what it's all about. That's what we need to do.
Right.
We don't have to agree with each other, but we have to be willing to talk about it. And you really exemplified that with this, and I thank you very much.
Thank you, my brother. Please stay strong. Take care. Same to you, Brother Mike. And, you know, Chuck, you and Mike, take care. Thank you for the New American Dream radio show. And as I said, I told my brothers and sisters in Texas about the show, so I'm sure they're going to be checking it out and tuning in. And, hey, thank you. The thanks is to the people. Thanks so much. All power to the people. Thank you, Chuck.
And now for another episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle. Buddy is usually patrolling the War on Terror Memorial Highway in South Central Alabama. He's usually sitting in a grove of trees next to a rotting deer carcass, can't see a thing, but he can hear that the highway is packed from all the noise. He usually cranks the Bolshoi Ballet in his earbuds as he snacks on the boiled potatoes he brought for break time and also sneaks a peek at the crayfish buckwheat blintzes he packed for his lunch. He's usually got his personal phone pressed to his ear, waiting for a call to St. Petersburg to go through and the scanner running, waiting for a message from the Kremlin.
But now, he's on summer vacation. He's driving from Branson, Missouri to the Black Hills. On the way, he drives slow on the interstate in the left-hand lane all the way to Mount Rushmore. At the Mount Rushmore monument, when couples ask him to take their picture, he smiles and does it. But he always aims the camera straight at their feet. On the telescopes, where people are paying 50 cents to view the faces on the mountain, he pastes photos of Geronimo, Leonard Peltier, Bill Hicks, and George Carlin, Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, and Martin Luther King Jr. Buddy is a Russian spy. Stay tuned for next week's episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle. Sponsored by Lemon Fresh Borax. Also sponsored of On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, The View from My Piroshki Cart. When your dogs tell you that the Russians pooped in the hallway while you were at work, and the Democrats tell you, no, we didn't rig the election against Bernie Sanders, we didn't commit treason, dozens of felonies, we didn't conspire against the American people, look over there, Russians! We're there for you, protecting the homeland. Lemon Fresh Borax in the fading yellow box.
Our next guest for the show is M.K. Davis. M.K. Davis joins us each month from Benton, Mississippi. M.K. Davis is an expert, I guess if there can be such a thing. M.K. Davis is an expert on the Bigfoot phenomenon, the Bigfoot fact, I would say. So we're going to try and contact M.K. Davis right now in Benton, Mississippi.
Hello.
Well, hello, MK. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Okay. Well, I only have 13 minutes, and I've got kind of a wild story to tell. It's kind of a roundabout story. It involves some high strangeness. I was, last December, I had a report, actually I saw it on television, where this gentleman in Isola, Mississippi, claimed that he had six goats attacked by a chupacabra. And that kind of interested me, and it wasn't far from where I live, so I drove up there and I talked to the man, and he said the previous December he had nine hogs killed the same way. It drained all the blood out, you know, typical chupacabra style stuff. So I started going up there, and I'd make the rounds up through this road, back roads at night, just out of curiosity. And then one day, I took my drone, and I was going to do some drone footage, just kind of look around from way up high. And I went over near Sky Lake, and Sky Lake is no stranger to high strangeness. Sky Lake is where I'd heard some vocalizations and found a structure. But anyway, to make a long story short, after I flew my drone, this gentleman came up, and he was the landowner. And we were talking, and I told him, you know, I'd had a project where I was filming Indian mounds, you know, from the air. And I was going to make a website, you know, where people could go.
MK, we can't hear you anymore. Hello?
Chuck, was he on Skype?
Okay, I'm going to disconnect and try calling him again. That was strange.
Yeah, was he on phone or Skype, or how's that work?
He's on phone.
Okay.
You know, calling from my Skype to his phone.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Same as, you know, the other two.
Hello.
MK, you're
close. I don't know what happened, but I lost connection there.
Okay. Well,
try to
resume, please.
Okay. Now, where were we? What did you last hear me? Hello?
Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. Anyway, I was talking to this gentleman that owned the property there by Sky Lake, and he told me, I'll tell you where an Indian mound is. And I said, where? He says, we're on it right now. We're standing exactly on the spot. And I looked around. There was nothing there. He says, some of my ancestors dozed it down. But this is where it was. And right there on the banks of Sky Lake. And I told him, I got permission from him to come back. So the other day, it's kind of funny how one thing leads to another. But the other day, I went back with my grandchildren. I brought my drone. And I went to fly the drone out away from across this field where everything was flattened out. And when I went to come back, I saw it convulse in the air. It just shuddered. And something had happened to it. It lost signal temporarily, and I was barely able to land it. And I rebooted my console, and it did it again. And then it was so close to crashing that it was actually hopping across the surface. And I finally got the props to come to a halt. But I took my compass out, and right there where that mound was, where the man said the mound was, it had no. It didn't know where north, south, east, or west was. It just turned with me. Whenever I turned, I did a circle, and it just turned with me. It had no effect. So something was amiss right there where that mound was. And I had seen this before. I had seen it in a case of another mound just north of Noxipater, Mississippi, called the Naniwaya Mound. And it, my drone malfunctioned there too, also badly, but it didn't malfunction until I got on top of the mound, hovering over the top of the mound at low altitude. And so, the Naniwaya mound, just like that mound wasn't far from where the Chupacabra was, the Naniwaya mound is not far from a cave where the Choctaws say that a Bigfoot-like creature emerges from this cave. And they call the creature Champ. I said, well, there's two cases of a mound that has electromagnetic anomalies, and they're near a place where Bigfoot appears. And this was so real to the Choctaws that they got online, found a Bigfoot hunter, and called him, and got him to come down there. And then when he left, they called him again. They kept seeing a Bigfoot or Bigfoot-like creature, and they say he emerged from that cave. They call him Champ. Well, this is at the headwaters of the Pearl River, and the Pearl River and the Pearl River Basin has a long history of Bigfoot sightings all the way down to the famous Honey Island, where they say there's a swamp monster living in Honey Island. And, I thought to myself, Bigfoot itself is strange enough, but when you start to find that there's some unseen things going on in the areas around where Bigfoot appeared, so makes its appearance. And I would not have known it had I not flying this drone. This drone has loaded with sensors. I mean, it senses everything, and it has to have input to fly correctly. It's self-stabilizing. It knows where the ground is. It knows where objects are. And when it loses those inputs, it does this kind of convulsion in the air. You can see it happen. And from that point on, it's confused. And when you want to bring it down, it don't necessarily want to come down. I had to force it down. It kept wanting to go left, right, in and out. It just lost all stability. And And it has not, it's never done it away from an Indian mound, but not every Indian mound did it do it. Only some of them. So it did it to a severe degree yesterday at this mound that was dozed down. It's not even a mound there anymore. There's Indian pottery all in the ground, but the mound itself is not there. But right where that mound was, there was an anomaly, a geo-electromagnetic anomaly that you can see it hit that drone in a pulse pattern. So I'm really interested in that. I plan to look into that as much as I possibly can. But, you know, we don't see everything that's in our world, and we never have. And now in our modern age, we do pick up, you know, radio frequencies, things like that. We can see in the infrared and the ultraviolet with specialized equipment, but just the average everyday fella cannot see those things. So we can't see an electromagnetic pulse, but that drone saw it. The drone felt it. And, it had left me with a difficult job of getting it down. And so right there, just a hop, skip, and a jump from Sky Lake, where that structure was, where those vocalizations were, and then if you could draw a triangle back over there to where that chupacabra-like killings took place, and then draw the other side of the triangle back to that Indian mound, you have the Bermuda Triangle in the Mississippi Delta, and some really strange stuff going on there. I got some plans. I got a friend of mine that's got a meter of it measures electromagnetic frequency variations. And we're going to go back out there and we're going to see if we can pick up something on his meter. And if we do, what are we picking up? And if it has patterns or if it appears to be random, you know, that sort of thing. But Bigfoot may have some other issues that we don't know about. And that's kind of where I'm going with this. I'm always open-minded looking into those kinds of things. How are we on our time?
Well, we don't have much of it left. But
I didn't think so.
Thank you. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and isn't that an odd story? It's got a combination of... go ahead.
No, that's okay. You're right. It's a very odd story, and it really makes you wonder.
Yeah, it does. The things that you can and can't see, you know, Bigfoot is elusive anyway, you know, and mostly it's a visual thing. But some people do say that they experience other things.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Corner with
Mithril0xE0517.
We talk about decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, MyCoin, YourCoin, Blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. You out-of-town guys sure think you're real keen. Think all of us boys here are homespun and green. God damn it, you're all gonna die, oh Lord. God damn it, you're all gonna die, oh Lord. God damn it, you're all gonna die. Texan love song, Elton John. I remember. You remember, too, back in the day, as they say today. Winter of 71, summer of 74, huh? Right in there. Right there, in there, somewhere. If you die today or tomorrow, if your life flashes before you as you choke on some Arby's or go flying off a bridge or jump, you'll remember the round light flasher on the silver Christmas tree, watching that sucker go round and round for hours. You'll remember some other shit. You'll remember songs and being out driving around in a special old car, road hunting and drinking on a beautiful fall day and shooting aliens. Saucer flying fucking aliens. What are they doing here if they're not from around here anyway? Maybe your buddy hit one. Then you don't remember anything but that after that. Last time, AC, Kenny, and Rick were out drinking and road hunting by Broken Bridge. Rick was sitting in the back seat, shooting out the front window where Kenny's ears were. He wanted to kill something. His way of grieving over his brother, who drowned in the new man-made lake in town a couple days ago. And then there was someone out in the dark. Rick grabbed one of the shotguns from the back seat, walked out toward the old bridge. He raised the gun to his shoulder and shot, the light from the barrel reaching out like a lightsaber. He ran back to the car, and then they all ran, skidding down the dusty gravel road up to a favorite old drinking spot on a hill. The lights of some tiny town were off to the right. Never noticed those before. I think the flashing lights off to the left, I think those are from the airport. And then there was the slow-moving traffic on the highway, all kind of like a moving painting at night. And in the foreground, if you all just gather around over here, we have the black and white 1957 Chevrolet with the boys inside who just murdered an innocent alien being. And just behind them, we have the Stone Family Cemetery, dating back to 1859. Notice the big moon, the shadows of cows let loose in the cornfield after the harvest. The hint of understated looming gloom, despair, and four lives ended abruptly, and fathers screaming, mothers crying, grandmothers punching stomachs with both hands. "Is there a God?" said Rick in a whisper. "Some people say aliens are gods," said AC. "Don't say that," I said. "Another shooting star." "That's the aliens looking for their friends," said AC. "Shut up," I said. "And another. Asteroids getting burned up in our atmosphere. Or an alien posse, maybe." It's true this is an alien hotspot for some reason. Lots of people have sightings, or say they do. Could be because there's a regional collector country school called Area 51. It's west of town. Big playground. Really tall flagpole. I think kids from three counties go there. I think there's a God, I say. Headlights are coming. It looks like it's right down on the road. Oh, shit, we all think. I start the car. Rick barks. If I have to, I'll try to get past him. That's all I could do is try. We'd get caught. But what else could we do? Sit here and let ourselves be arrested for murder? Not really murder, AC says. The headlights come to the mouth of our road and go past. It's an alien. Really? He turns toward us, pulls his feet up to his chest, presses back against his door. Like killing a Mexican. Oh, Rick groans like he needs to vomit. If they don't have papers, it's not like they're real, says AC. Where'd you use something like that, I said. My dad. Your dad, I said at the same time. Was he dead? I turned to ask. Blood flew, Rick said. Every fucking where. He fell backwards, that's all as I know. It might be alive, said AC. We need to go back there, I said. It was an alien, said AC. It had arms, I said. And legs, said AC. Aliens have those, said Rick. How would you know, said AC? Because I saw him on the guy before I shot him. Oh, groaned AC. That don't make sense. Yeah, it does, said Rick. I turned around. Why did you shoot? I turned around more. You were going to shoot no matter who it was. Why? No, I wasn't. You were too, said AC. We both stared back into the dark. We couldn't see Rick. Too fucking dark. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm fucking sorry. He pounded a fist into the seat, slammed an elbow into the back. Shit. God damn it. AC and I turned around. We sat. We might sit there forever. For a long time. What's it feel like, said AC, so quiet. Rick groaned. Let me out, he said. Let me out. Hurry up. He fell on his knees into the ditch. You could hear him puking. It's an alien. Nobody will ever know, said AC, while Rick rustled in the weeds like a wounded pheasant. That's true, I thought. How could it be an alien, I said. Maybe it's the escape guy, he said. From NSH, I said. I don't know, said AC. Rick got in. He smelled like puke. Time is. I gotta go home. Home, shouted AC. AC was right. We didn't have a home anymore. No more meeting the guys at Arctic Ice every Friday and Saturday night. Maybe sitting in the parking lot all night or driving around. You ever wonder why we got all those military bases overseas? Nobody wonders. I wonder. The Empire. Ay, 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 I am the Frito Bandito, aliens. They would never make a commercial making fun of blacks or Jews or Catholics or Italians or Germans, for that matter. I was talking about Area 51 school, you know. The Walders have this mega Christmas display on their lawn every year up in the development by the lake. Only rich people celebrate Christmas like that. Last year, somebody put a stuffed alien doll in the sleigh and took Santa out. Huh. No more construction work. That's a good thing. We all work construction in the summer. I tended for some bricklayers last year. Rick worked on a bridge crew. That's dawn to dusk for $2.20 an hour. That's what they paid back then. Some guys got $1.60. The bricklayers I worked for got $4-something. I wonder what they did with all that. My mom works at Homeview Nursing Home. It's famous, well, or infamous. We all know we're headed there. It smells like urine the minute you step in the door. Whenever I have to go pick her up, I wait in the parking lot. She knows I'm out there. She should. My dad works for Hustler Ford. He's a pretty decent salesman for all I know, but he wants to be a writer. He's got an idea for a whole line of books, how-to books, explaining to the common guy how to do things, how to wire your home, how to learn Spanish, how to understand economics. They all have the same name, the For Retards series. Spanish for retards. Electronics for retards, like that. Bob Seger's on the radio, KSTP, clear as a bell. He wants to dream like a young man with the wisdom of an old man. We live in a newer part of town on the west side called Sunset Edition. Lots of Catholics out there. They're even building a new Catholic church out there in addition to the old one downtown. He wants his home and security. Wants to live like a sailor at sea. Rick lives way the fuck over on the east side. It's also an addition with a name, Prairie Park. Lots of young families out there, same as Sunset. The dads in Sunset sell cars and insurance and are in the Knights of Columbus. Dads in Prairie Park work at the steel mill a couple miles away. AC lives in town in one of the neighborhoods. You think a city is having neighborhoods, turf. Well, a town our size does, too. You wouldn't have a clue where they are if you weren't from here. But we know. They aren't drawn out. You don't get beat up for stepping over the line, but you just kind of can feel it. I don't know. I can't explain it. The neighborhoods are 2, 3, 4 blocks, sometimes with their own neighborhood grocery store, neighborhood elementary school, their own legends, maybe a famous difficult intersection. Their own football or baseball team. That's if two neighborhoods each have some organizational genius who has the energy to call everybody. When AC's neighborhood, they have Hartwig's store. In the next neighborhood, there's Brosh's. Hardwood floor, place smells like cherry popsicles. So people always smile when you come in like you're some big addition to their life just by coming in to buy more baseball cards. There's also the neighborhood childhood home of Joe B. Larson in AC's neighborhood on the west side of the railroad tracks that eventually runs past the downtown Catholic Church and through the downtown. Joe B. Larson is on TV, late night talk show. 10:30, that's late for some people. I'm not sure if it's Joe B. Larson or if it's just me, but I have this feeling somewhere in me that the whole world is waiting for special me. I have the suspicion that the feeling is some kind of special psychosis somewhere in me, waiting, growing, fermenting, flowering, waiting to bloom just as I step up to accept my award for best man. Did I mention our family is very Catholic? There's several breeds of Catholics, like sheep. Ours is Midwestern Very. Dad has personal license plates on his new Ford something. G-O-B-G-R-E-D, go big red. We create enemies because of fear, due to propaganda on purpose. We had this one nun who taught religion too in the high school. She came from China or Zimbabwe or something. She wasn't white. Sister Wimowe, the guys called her. She said things like that. That one tour of the state hospital we had, that was in grade school. Sister Wimowe took us out there once, too. She pointed to each one of those big brick buildings as our class walked by in front. World War I, she said. World War II. Korea. Vietnam. She said she didn't understand why all those military bases overseas. And that was 40-something years ago. An owl hooted. Maybe it's the same one from the bridge. And we aren't the only murderers in town. Back in the 60s or 50s, some Negroes from Omaha came through in an old and robbed a bank, shot some old people, raped some young women. They were killed in a hail of bullets on a side road in Iowa by some of our guys and Iowa farmers in pickups. And out at Prairie Park, some Mexicans just came up to the one house on a bright summer Tuesday morning and started screaming. You know how you can talk loud to make people understand another language? Maybe it was like that. For a bunch of women at the house having the regular Young Women's Tuesday coffee meeting, I think. And they all got up from their table, started screaming back at these little Mexican men out by the front door. Speak English! Speak English! Speak English! They screamed and stomped their feet and pulled at their own hair. They might have thrown things. Maybe the Mexicans wanted directions or food, or they had to pee. They got angry too, rushed the front door, raped all the women on the kitchen floor. Then they left, even though they had to pee, were hungry and didn't know where they were going. The women went back to their coffee and cookies and cards. When their husbands all came home from the steel mill and asked how their day was, they told them they were all raped by Mexicans, and they found hamburger at Safeway for $1.19 for Friday night, and tonight was going to be TV dinners, chicken, apple crisp, and mixed vegetables. And all the men met over at the Lonely Bull, get to drinking, decided to find those Mexicans, go driving all over three counties on dirt and gravel roads, shooting shotguns out the windows in shadows. And they never found them, because there never was Mexicans around there back then. Of course, all these are legends. Not possible anymore to tell if they really happened. But in a way, they did happen, even if they're not real. Because people believe in them. Put their trust in them, just like they believe in Big Red. You know, you think you know, what the world is. At the edge of the world, it's what you can see in your peripheral vision. That's it. You think that what you've heard or read or experienced is what there is. Then, when someone shows you a book or information or something you just had no idea about it, you fight it. That can't be true. But then you're forced to expand your peripheral vision. That's happened to me. I think what's wrong with our town is that most people don't get confronted like that with all this other shit. What are we going to do, says AC. He slumped down and tired, might be going to fall asleep. Cops are coming. The aliens are looking for us. Rick still cannot talk without sounding all whiny and shit. He's the whiniest murderer by far that I know. We go back, like I said. AC has his head all the way back, his mouth open. Something's going to land in there. I could give a shit. His hat fell outside a while ago. I'm not getting it. About half bald already. He'll be an old man by the time he's out of college. Probably not going anywhere, so he'll be all right. Rick is snoring, stretched out on the back seat. His legs are curled to his chest because it's getting cold out. For now, I'm all alone. I wonder what we should do. I watch the bottom road for lights. Watch so hard, I can't see a thing. You know, they say you shouldn't drink, but we've actually had some good times out drinking. There are lots of stories about us. Legends in our own minds. Might write a book someday. One time AC and Roy were out riding around with an ear of corn dragging behind their car, saying they were out trolling for hogs. That's funny to us. Mr. Tweed pulled up next to some girls, asked them if they liked eggs, then threw an egg that broke on the driver's forehead. Then everybody was in Mark's dad's pickup, coming back into town from fishing at the sandpit, sitting on folding chairs, drinking quarts of Schlitz, driving down Maine. Crosby had a fishing net. Car pulled up alongside, he starts beating on the car with the net. Found out the next day that was Mark's dad's boss. There's lots more. None are funny to anyone else. But to us, we talk about them every time we get together. Just to mention of Jim holding onto an ice cream cone and that big U-boat steering wheel on the 50 Ford one night, jamming the ice cream cone into his face as he turned right, sends us flopping on our stomachs. Or disconnecting Mr. Tweed's coil wires. Or him driving around Maine the whole night with his dome light on. But everybody got back safe. driving home blind drunk hundreds of times, probably, sometimes not remembering the night before. Well, there were a couple guys got killed, but only guys we didn't know that good, so they didn't matter. Couldn't take that much to not matter. A couple blocks, social class, a couple of years. You only go to the weddings or funerals you can't skip. There weren't any wars for us. Vietnam ended like the day before we graduated. Some hippie put his head into English class and said, "The war's over." We're like, "What war?" We would have gone. Fought, died, killed. We never talked about it. That's crazy behavior. Wonder if our whole class was crazy. We talked about sports and girls and drinking. Nothing about Vietnam. Not Bobby Kennedy. Not Leonard Peltier. Not Fred Hampton or Dan Berrigan. Nobody talked about that stuff. Not parents, teachers, priests, ministers, editors, retards. Nobody. If anybody saw any aliens, they sure weren't saying. And this one girl's dad out in the sunset, when the Catholic Church started communion in the hand, committed suicide, jumping off the roof of their ranch style 27 times. We laughed about that. I wonder if she did. We didn't care. I care now a little. Oh, God, they just keep on coming. One more. You know how you get those sheets of hundreds of pictures of yourself every year you're supposed to give out to everyone? One year, somehow, somebody got a hold of Isaac Doherty's pictures, and you would start to see them everywhere. We called them Izzy Doherty handouts. You see a couple in the trophy case squeezed in between the glass and somehow landing right side up. And they'd be on the bulletin board in the office next to the photos of the principal's family, or on Mrs. Gleason's front desk in English. I saw one on the bulletin board at the Safeway downtown by the coupons for ice milk and at the bottom of a holy water font at church. AC said he saw one attached to an ear tag of one of the cows at the auction barn and inside a plastic menu at Pizza Hut. Doherty never got mad, as far as I know. That time Weema Way took us out to the state hospital and pointed at the buildings, said World War I, World War II. We knew there weren't any soldiers in there, but nobody wanted to hurt her feelings since she was from Africa or something. The men walking around standing in the windows were in nightgowns and crusty pajamas. Crazy people. AC's mom used to work out there. I think she's a nurse or some shit. That's how he got his nickname. His mom works a lot, weekends and stuff. Every year when it was time for his dad to put in the window air conditioners in the house, AC got roped into helping. We'd see him up there on a ladder or leaning out a window helping his dad. We'd go by and honk, and you could just see the look on his face like he had a shit. One year he came home and he saw the window units lined up in the driveway. We were going to play football in Central Park that afternoon. He decided he wasn't going to miss it, so he didn't even go inside. He just piled the air conditioners into his car, front seat, back seat, trunk, drove over to the park. In his mind, he would just tell his dad he was going to do it after the game. He was just getting all the units together to get ready to do the job. We started the game. We're all sitting around on the grass resting, talking about shit, and we see a figure coming across the middle school lawn. It's wearing a white T-shirt. It's walking tall and straight and fast, straight toward old Benedict. When he saw it was his dad, he took off running. His dad ran after him. Benedict ran all the way downtown through Woolworths, came out the back, took off for the church. He hid in one of the confessionals. His dad came into the church, went right for where Benedict was, and drug him out of the church, kicked his ass all the way back to the park. We drove by his house later. There was old AC up on the ladder, not looking down. And that's the news from Moon Rock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And don't forget, it's listener-supported radio. So head on over to freedomslips.com and show them some support. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
And thank you, Chuck, for all you do, all you've done to make this show possible. And thanks to our guests, Larry Pinkney, M.K. Davis, Derek Potts, Phil Ferruccio, Frank Cordero. Please visit the New American Dream website at newdream.us for the archives. Also, penmagazine.us. If you'd like to donate to the Des Moines Catholic Worker, write to the Phil Berrigan House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. And so good night to my friends Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. Good night, Mrs. Calabas. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hawksprung. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Muhammad Atta. And good night, Omar Mateen. Good night, Noah Posner. Good night, Crystal Campbell. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
I pulled into Nazareth, was feeling about 10:30. I just need some place where I can lay my head. Hey, mister, can you tell me where a man might find a bed? He just grinned and shook my hand, and no was all he said. Take the load off, Annie. Take the load for free. Take the load off, Annie. And you put the load right on me. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Night of our lives, but you're gonna let it be the worst.
And I guarantee a week won't go by in your life you won't regret walking out, letting them get the best of you.
Well, I'm not going home.
We've got too far,
and I'm gonna stay right here and fight for this lost cause.
A day may come when the courage of men fails,
but it is not this day.
The line must be drawn here, this far, no farther.
I'm not saying it's gonna be easy.
You're gonna work harder than you ever worked before.
But that's fine, we'll just get tougher with it.
If a person grits his teeth and shows real determination,
failure is not an option.
That's how winning is done.
Believe me when I say,
we can break this army here.
And win just one for the Gipper.
But I say to you, what every warrior has known since the beginning of time,
you've got to get mad.
I mean plumb mad dog mean.
If you would be free men, you must
fight to fulfill that promise. Let us
cut out their living guts
1 inch at a time.
And they will know what we can do.
Let no man forget how menacing we are. We are lions.
You're like a big bear, man.
This is your time.
Seize the day.
Never surrender.
Victory or death.
That's the Chicago.
Who's with me?
Clap! Clap!
Don't let him die! Clap!
All right, let's fly!
And gentlemen in England, now abed, shall know my name is the Lord.
But I tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take
our Independence Day.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. One world coming together to bring freedom home. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This
is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be